This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Hello, this is the Inch Podcast, recorded Wednesday, October 28th, 2009. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, podcast host and senior writer covering ECAC hockey, joined tonight by Inch editor and columnist Mike Eidelbiss. Hello, Mike.
Guten Tag.
I don't know what that means.
That's German. That means good day.
Good day. I'll go with it. And you've already learned something.
Oh.
On the Inch Podcast.
I think that you can write this off as an educational expense now.
Terrific.
You can get a credit.
Full credit?
Well, I don't know.
What is this, Florida State?
If it was Alabama, we got some good deals on textbooks for you.
Yeah. Well, let's talk college hockey. And we'll start with one of the teams that is making some waves, and that would be Denver. A pair of 3-0 shutouts last week over Minnesota. Mark Cheverie, their goalie, was our Inch Player of the Week, National Player of the Week, and has three straight shutouts. How about Denver, Buss? We've seen them quite a bit this year via the magic of television. And, you know, as we weren't very impressed early, but last week I think we were more impressed by Denver. What's your take on the Pioneers right now?
Well, I think that coming into the season, there were some unrealistic expectations about this team. Some talk about, you know, potentially being the best team ever during George Gwozdecki's tenure at Denver. Perhaps a little bit premature in that speculation. I mean, they're a very good team, but they still have a lot of freshmen playing some key positions, especially on defense. And then Joel Colborne gets hurt and breaks a finger, and he's out. He was out for last weekend, and obviously didn't slow him down too much. But coming into the season, you know, I thought that they would be good offensively, good enough defensively. And Cheverie has kind of, to me, always been the kind of the X factor, the question mark. I mean, he's a good goalie. At least I thought he was a good goalie last year, but kind of not the kind of guy who will steal games. And he was just out and out solid this weekend against Minnesota. You know, we watched the Friday night game, and, you know, he was real good getting square to the shooter. He looks like he's a bit quicker going side to side, I think, this year. You know, they're going to be tough to deal with. You know, you look at that league, and at least right now, it looks like Denver and North Dakota right at the top. There's really not a weakness on either of those teams, at least that I can see. I was really impressed with Denver on Friday. I thought they looked really good, and they just looked unflappable, played with a lot of confidence. Seemed to really dictate the kind of the tempo of that game and just kind of control what was going on. I mean, granted, Minnesota's having a lot of problems right now, but at least on Friday, that mostly was due to what Denver was doing, and maybe not so much of what Minnesota was not doing.
Yeah. One thing that I keep coming back to when I think about Denver is that maybe we were – maybe we're overreacting to a small sample size. You know, when it looked like, you know, Vermont scores 9 goals in the first weekend, gets a split. They split at Ohio State, a team that's only got 2 wins all year. And then, you know, you're like, what's wrong with Denver? And now we shouldn't be too quick to say what's right with Denver all of a sudden. You know, it's a long way to go. But I guess that's why these early season games are so much fun. You're just getting back into it. Get to see what we think about certain teams. Mm-hmm. Last week at this time, we thought an awful lot about Vermont, and then they lost to Merrimack last weekend 5-2, and all of a sudden you've got a Merrimack team that is won four in a row since opening their season at North Dakota. So, you know, we've got to let things shake out a little bit here. But
well, I think, you know, you get to that, what's wrong with Denver, what's wrong with BU, what's wrong with BC, what's wrong with Vermont, whomever, what's wrong with Wisconsin, what's wrong with Minnesota. You know, what's wrong with them is they've only been practicing for about a week or so, or, you know, a little more than that by this point in time. But, you know, when they come out and Denver plays Vermont, they've been practicing for, you know, 10 days or whatever it is. You know, it takes a while for them to get, regardless of how, you know, how talented your team is, or regardless of how many veterans you've got coming back, you know, it takes a while to get into a rhythm and to, you know, get familiarity with maybe, you know, new line combinations, a new defensive partner, guys playing with one another for the first time.
And a lot of guys going through experiences for the first time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
First road trip, their first, you know, third period, their first, you know, back-to-back conference nights, you know, all these things that you go through.
So, I think maybe more so than it seems, and maybe I'm off base, and I was kind of thinking about this over the when we were going through power rankings on Sunday. You know, it was maybe more so than any other year that I can remember, at least in the what we like to refer to as the Inch era of 7 or 8 years now, that, you know, there hasn't really been a team that has jumped out and taken command early and kind of emerged as a team that maybe is going to be a force to reckon with down the road. You know, I think we're kind of seeing some teams playing pretty good, but nobody, you know, kind of really seizing that grasp on being the best team so far. You know, Miami has been number one for the most part since the regular season started, but I think, you know, a lot of that's some of that is due to is basically by default. You know, they've lost the game here, but the other teams lost too.
Yeah, the two teams that had really jumped out to that strong start were Miami and North Dakota, and both of those teams suffered losses on Saturday night. You know, you're not going to go undefeated. Let's be honest. And if you're 5-1 or 6-1-1 or whatever you're off to, that's a great start. But, you know, we're not expecting teams to go undefeated, but I think of the teams I've seen this year, and I know it's early, North Dakota was the most impressive to me. Just as far as what they've done, what they can do, and how they're playing. So.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Denver's, I don't think, too far behind. It almost gets to the point with those when you compare those two teams. And obviously I think Miami's got to be in there too. The one thing I think I would say about Miami is that they've been in some interesting games thus far and really have, for the most part, answered the bell in every case. You know, they had the weird game against UNH when there was 9 goals in the second period and they ended up with a tie. You know, they win an OT game, the first game of the year against St. Cloud. Even the loss that they had against Michigan State this past weekend, I mean, they were down 2-0 heading into the third period, and they got 2 late goals to tie that game and send it into overtime, and they ended up losing an OT. You know, and that's a veteran team, too. There's not a lot of freshmen in that lineup on a regular basis. You know, the cornerstone of that program right now is a lot of veteran guys. So I think they've got to be in the mix too. But yeah, I agree. I think North Dakota, probably. I think I would put them a tick better than maybe. You know, I don't know. I say that, and then I start thinking about it, and then I'm like, well, maybe Miami's better. Well, maybe.
Let's just say that those two are clearly the top two right
I
now.
I would put those three.
With Denver, and I would put Denver as a bronze medalist. But
yeah, I think that they've got... Yeah, I think I would agree with that.
Let's talk about the other side a little bit. Panic button, probably too soon for those kinds of things. But start with Minnesota. What do they need to get it going?
Do you think it's too early for the panic button there?
I think it's too early across the board for the panic button because it's not November 1st yet. But
true.
I think that if there is a place that might be looking for one to push on Sunday morning, or in Minnesota's case, Sunday night, as they play Sunday evening, that might be a school that's looking at it. I think you've got an RIT program that's 0-5-0 on the season. Got swept in an Atlantic Hockey Series for the first time since they joined that league. You know, it was at Air Force, and they were both one-goal games, but, you know, it's not a program that's gone through long losing streaks.
No.
Since joining the Division I level. Ohio State, you know, I think they had some pretty high expectations that have not yet been realized. So I'm just thinking about some of the programs that might want to start thinking about things a little bit. And
start pumping the brakes?
To me, yeah, exactly. To me, the most disappointing part about Minnesota has been the effort.
Yeah, I would agree.
They had better efforts against Denver, but they still didn't score a goal over two full games at home. So, I think that's a team that is... When I see that, the first thing that comes to mind is leadership. Whether that comes from the coaching staff, whether it comes from the upperclassmen, whether it comes from a younger player who's got leadership qualities, they've got a... Talent's not the issue. You know, they've got guys, but they need to get on the same page.
Yeah, I really have been trying to wrap my head around that team and just trying to figure out what exactly is the problem. And I think, you know, I think it does start with effort. Obviously they just, you know, they get outworked at every turn. The goaltending has been, I think, pretty darn good.
I agree with that.
At least good enough for them to win games. But I think, you know, you get to effort, and when I look at their roster, it makes me wonder, you know, if this is a sign of, or if this is a symptom of a bigger problem as far as, are they recruiting the right kids? We mentioned, you look at the number of NHL draft picks that are in the lineup on a night-in, night-out basis. I mean, we're talking about 12, 13, 14 kids who've been picked by NHL teams. And is that an indication of the level of talent that they have? Well, to some degree it is, although, we've obviously stated in the past that the NHL draft is, you know, some of it is speculation, obviously, based on, you know, how big a kid's going to get and that type of thing. But, when I look at some of these names in the Gopher lineup, I mean, it's clear that a lot of these kids who were highly touted coming in, and, you know, we were right there touting them with everybody else, just have not lived up to expectations. I mean, I think that, and maybe that gets to the effort and to the desire portion of the equation. Maybe it's fair to wonder whether some of these kids have the necessary drive to go with the talent. I don't know. I mean, you've seen him play, and you know there's a bunch of highly drafted kids in that lineup every night, and there's a disconnect between the talent and the desired result. And
yeah, one thing that I said over the weekend, and to fill to fill in the listeners, we actually did watch, when we say we watched the game together, we actually physically did watch the game together. Little gathering, some inch staff members.
Oh, inch watch party.
Yeah, a little watch party in the Midwest. So if we make those references throughout the podcast, you know, like, oh, remember when I said blank? That really did happen. When you've got these types of kids that Minnesota is able to get, and we've seen many of them move on to professional careers after 1 or 2 years at the University of Minnesota, maybe you cultivate a reputation for being a training ground for professional hockey players. And if this current group is at Minnesota for their professional aspirations, they're not playing for Minnesota. You know, they're playing for the Islanders or Blue Jackets or Stars or Kings or whomever they may have been drafted by. You know, and that to me is one of the problems that could creep up when you have a roster comprised of those types of kids. And I think that one of the messages, if I was a member of the leadership group on the Gophers, one of the messages I would try to put forward is to play for the Gophers now. This is the team you're on now. And unless this goes well for you, there won't be, you know, those types of future opportunities.
Right. That's exactly right.
As easily as they seem to be right now via draft status and junior and youth hockey reputation dictated. So that would be my solution for that would be my message if I was in the Gopher room right now.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think that, you know, if you were to line up, let's say, Minnesota and North Dakota as an example, you know, I think you would agree that there's, you know, roughly the same amount of talent on both rosters. Based on reputation, maybe Minnesota has a little bit more. But again, based on reputation. But the one thing that Minnesota lacks, I think that, you know, that a North, and I'm just using North Dakota as an example, that they have is a little bit of an edge. You know, Minnesota doesn't have that edge. They don't have that grit, that at least from what I've seen from them in a couple games this year, they don't appear to be all that hard to play against. You know, it doesn't take much to outwork them. When you look at a team like North Dakota, sure, they've got the talent to put 5, 6, 7 goals up on you, but they're also, you know, if it's a one, if they're stuck in a 1-1 game, they've also got the necessary desire and, the willingness to play a physical game if they have to, or the willingness just to get dirty. And I'm not meaning like cheap shot dirty, but to grind a win out and find a way to win. I don't see that from Minnesota.
Right. And just so that we don't completely contradict ourselves, their first 4 games have come against 2 of the teams that we agreed were clearly the top among the top 3 in the country. And your opponents will have something to do with your performance on a nightly basis. And certainly Denver and North Dakota did very good things in those series against Minnesota. But what I saw and what I was concerned about was how Minnesota responded. Certainly they played better the second game at North Dakota in that 3-3 tie. But I'm looking for a 4-point weekend this week from them as they host Alaska Anchorage.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's almost... I think it's vital for them to kind of get this behind them and move on. That they need to have a big weekend. And I think they need not just, you know, have 4 points, but I think they need to have a game in there where they score, you know, 6 or 7 goals.
Yeah. Notre Dame 3-3. Couple good wins, couple tough losses to good teams. Couple losses to teams they probably should have beaten. What's your take on the Irish right now?
They're an interesting team. I think that, you know, I think for starters, they're really trying to. I think they're dealing with, I don't want to say issues in goal, but they're trying to find some direction in goal. I think, you know, Jeff Jackson's been a guy that kind of likes to get one guy in there and play him and play him and play him and have that continuity. And now they're kind of going between the, you know, actually all through, they've had 3 goalies play so far. You know, the freshman kid had a shutout in his first start. And then Phillips started again for them against BU and shut them out. To me, I think that that's been the, that's been the biggest thing. You know, I haven't, my viewing of them has been limited, other than, you know, saw a lot of the BU game where quite frankly, BU was pretty much atrocious that night. Or maybe that's being a bit harsh. Maybe it sounds like Chris Collinsworth with that, but, and then they played, I saw a little bit of one of the games against Providence, actually the one they lost, where, you know, I thought they looked pretty good, but, you know, just couldn't generate, couldn't get another goal, and they gave up a goal late in the third period. You know, I think that they're just trying to find their way a little bit right now. I have a hunch they're going to find their way out of it. I think getting the goaltending, it's, you know, not that it's a huge issue, but I think they just kind of trying to determine what they've got back there. And, you know, and then, and they're missing some keys from last year. You know, not just guys who contributed like Condra and Hansen and such, but, you know, also that's, you know, those are leadership voids that they have to fill.
Right. Absolutely.
And, you know, you look at Hansen, too. I mean, he's the kind of guy, you know, going back to the one Providence game that I saw, I actually watched it on the internet. So,
so that thing works?
Heck yeah. Good. Thanks. I'd like to thank Al Gore for that spectacular invention. But, you know, there was a lot of cases where they, where Notre Dame came in on rushes and, you know, not even odd man, but, you know, 3-on-3 and really generated a lot of chances, but would get the one shot on. And, you know, the rebound would be cleared or whatever. And it, as I was watching this, I'm thinking, you know, if there's a guy like Hansen in there who just kind of camp in front of the net or come bearing down on the other wing, you know, maybe that maybe it's not just not a, you know, a one shot and then turned away. Maybe it's, you know, a rebound and a goal.
Right.
So I think that, you know, I think they're looking to fill certain pieces. You know, most notably where they're, which, you know, what they're going to do with goaltending and, you know, I think the guys that they have offensively are guys that can score pretty goals, but maybe not gritty goals. And I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but it just came out that way. So apologies.
You could put that on a t-shirt, sell it at hockey camp over the summer.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, now you've got Notre Dame and Ohio State this weekend. I think it's the kind of weekend that can turn a team in the right direction or give them a jumping off point for the month of November as you head into, you know, the end of the first semester. I think that's a good series for both of those teams right now. I'll be interested in how that goes.
Yeah, I will too. And I, you know, Ohio State was, you know, up at Lake State last week and split with the Lakers. You know, they're a tough team to get a read on too, you know. I'm trying to think of their schedule off the top of their head. I know they opened by, you know, Quinnipiac swept them in Columbus, and then they split with Denver in Columbus, and then they go up to the Sioux and split with Lake State.
Yeah.
So now they're back on the road again in another tough series against Notre Dame, and, you know, a Notre Dame team that's trying to, I think, develop some consistency and find some consistency. You know, I don't know. I think that Notre Dame is really poised for a breakout, and I think it might happen this weekend.
Could. Absolutely could. We'll see what happens. Couple teams out in Hockey East. BC's 1-1. BU is 1-2. Vermont's now 2-2 after we were so impressed with two of their wins, you know, at Denver and at Boston College. Then they lost to a Merrimack team. All of a sudden, it's 4-2-0. And as I said earlier, their only two losses of the year were at North Dakota in the first week of the season. So, good job to Merrimack for getting off to a good start. And
I don't know how much you remember of the Merrimack games, or how much you saw of those when they played at North Dakota.
I didn't see much of it.
I thought they looked pretty darn good. Better than I expected.
Right.
You know.
Well, you know, you can contrast it with what we saw a week later.
That's true.
They went in and played hard.
Yeah.
I remember that. I mean, I didn't see, as I said, a ton of it. And having known they would win their next four games, I might have kept it on the DVR a little longer. But, that's pretty telling. You know, they didn't get pushed around.
No, I actually wish I would have seen. I saw most of the first night when they lost, I think, 5-2. I wish I would have seen the second night, but it was a little closer. Right. You know, that first night they gave up goal right away. I think it might have been even the first shot that went in for North Dakota against Merrimack. And, you know, that put them in a bad spot. But, you know, I like the goalie. I thought he was good, and, you know, obviously starts there. And, you know, they pretty much shut down that Vermont team that, you know, looked real good against Denver.
Yeah. Their other three wins against Holy Cross, Army, and UConn, they play Friday and Sunday this week, a home-and-home with Boston College. So that'll be a good test for both teams. And we'll see what Merrimack is right now and what Boston College can do. For BC to get that win against Notre Dame is, I think, was a good win for them to get going, get their season going.
Yeah, they were pretty sluggish.
Getting goals from Ben Smith and Joe Whitney is important, too. Those guys have to get going.
Yeah, they really do. And I, you know, as the season progresses, I think that they've got a lot of question marks on their defense. And we might have even talked about this in the last podcast. But you know, I think that's going to be the key for them, is just you know, how quickly those guys can, because there's a lot of freshmen back there. Or untested guys for Boston College, and how quickly they can get up to speed is obviously going to be key for them. But I think the other thing too is, I think the thing that helps them, that really helps Boston College in that regard, is it seems like just about every team in Hockey East has a piece that maybe is a question mark.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
And maybe the only team that's not, that might be immune to that, is UMass Lowell. I mean, they seem like they've got the pieces in place.
I think they do. One of
and
the...
I guess we'll find out more about that this weekend also.
Yeah, yeah. Some Lowell reaction to this BU series is that they're treating it as a rematch from last year's Hockey East final, where they felt they were they got the bad end of the deal, so to speak, in that game against the Terriers. But when that happens, and that may just be from fans and commenters, but you know, letting that kind of emotion get in the way of the task at hand is dangerous if you're a Lowell team. You know, if that's the attitude that's running through the team and the coaching staff, then that could be energy directed in the wrong way. So I think that might be something that they should keep in mind, I think, over the weekend. A nice comeback win for Lowell last week. They trailed 3-2 after 2 at home to Colgate, scored three goals in the third period to get that win. So, good job there.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get into a little bit of ECAC hockey later.
Yeah, we'll move that way, but let's stay in Hockey East with Lowell for a little bit. We asked for some questions via Twitter this afternoon, and if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's just at Inch, INCH. That's our Twitter username, and we enjoy the folks we're following and what they contribute. And in our first shift article every week, we will include the tweet of the week. But we took a question, and it would be a rivalry if there wasn't some checking in on what the other team is doing. And
a little animosity.
And some UMass Lowell Twitterati asked, why should we buy into UMass's fast start when they do this every year? And I went back and looked, and they have started strongly. This is the fourth straight year. I mean, 06-07, they were 6-1-1. Next year, 4-2-2, and the next year, 4-1-1. That would have been last season, where their only loss was to North Dakota, or they had a win over North Dakota. And then this year, they're off to a 3-0-0 start with a win over Boston University. So UMass is off to a good start, and the only answer I would have for that is that kind of what we said earlier. You know, you've got to take everything at this stage of the season, you know, with a little touch of I guess fairness and reality to keep in mind that there is a long way to go. UMass has played all of its games at home. They haven't been on the road yet. When they played Rensselaer, it was RPI's first game. When they played BU, it was BU's first game. And then they played a Maine team that's been struggling so far this season. So this week they go on the road. They're playing Providence, a team that UMass probably would expect to beat. It's a home-and-home, Friday at Providence, Saturday at the Mullins Center. So we'll see. We'll see some more about UMass. Then they've got Niagara for two. And then mid-November, they play two against New Hampshire, and then at Yale and at Vermont and at Quinnipiac. So you've got some pretty strong tests there in mid to late November.
Well, and, you know, going back to the question why, you know, and I'm going to paraphrase since I don't remember the exact question, but you know, why focus on their fast start? Well, that's just kind of the way it works. You know, if somebody gets out and wins six games in a row or something like that, I mean, it looks pretty to see 6-0-0 or whatever next to a team's name, as opposed to when you get, you know, in February and a team's won 8 in a row. You know, it doesn't jump off the page at you unless you're really looking closely at it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, some of it's just timing. But I think that, you know, there's some pretty talented kids on that UMass team, and I think that, you know, maybe they're a little better than, you know, that's Hockey East is a really tough league to figure out because there's a lot of teams that, you know, you can make a case for and say, yeah, you know, UMass has got this, and then you can come back and say, yeah, but they don't have that. I mean, I think that's kind of the upshot in Hockey East this year, is that there's not really that complete team. And I think, you know, like the consensus is that Lowell might be the most complete team, with BU not far behind in that regard.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. We will see what happens.
And also, I think I should have looked this up before we started, but I think, and maybe you saw this and I just missed it, is Nick Bonino out this weekend?
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah,
a couple weeks.
I don't have the details on that. I saw a note somewhere briefly alluding to it, and then did not go in depth on it.
Yeah, he's out with injury.
Do we know what the injury is?
It's an arm situation, shoulder, arm, elbow, wrist, something like that. Upper body injury.
All right. Well, that's a big loss for them, obviously.
Yep. As far as ECAC hockey goes, the teams start playing now.
we can rank somebody that has a win in that league.
Yeah. So we'll get to some more games there. Clarkson and St. Lawrence had a nice little game, a non-league game, at Chiel. Clarkson won 4-1. Always great when those teams get together. And they've taken in recent seasons to doing more of the non-league stuff. So, you know, it's tough. As I speak about every year, it's tough for these teams to find games. And now even Ivy League programs are playing non-league games against one another. Mm-hmm. Harvard and Dartmouth have one lined up for Thanksgiving weekend. This weekend marks the Ivy Showcase, where Brown, Yale, and Princeton get together and invite a Canadian team, so that two teams will get two games. The host team will get two games, and the other two will get one game and one exhibition. So in that cycle, that includes Yale and Princeton on Saturday afternoon. So that's a nice early test for those two clubs. And, yep. And you get a look at a Brown team that's going to have new energy and new direction with a new head coach. Cornell played two exhibitions last weekend with a pretty easy win over a Canadian team and a 3-2 loss to U.S. National Development Program under 18s, where they were beaten in goal by an Ithaca, New York native who is also a Big Red recruit and is expected to play at Cornell next year. His name is Andy Isles. So,
well, if you're going to lose,
yeah,
you might as well.
What if I thought the statement was, if you can't beat them, join them. Not if you can beat them, join them.
Or beat them and then join them.
Yeah. So that's kind of the look there. Clarkson at Minnesota Duluth this weekend to, you know, another good early season measuring stick type of weekend for both teams. Also, New Hampshire at Wisconsin.
Yeah, that'll be a good series.
Those kind of highlight the non-league intriguing matchups of the weekend.
So, Blake Kessel returns to his hometown.
Oh, yes.
I wonder if he'll be booed like his brother was. I doubt it.
Yeah, I would doubt that.
His brother seemed to cause a touch more division.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We will see.
Harvard, you mentioned. Did you mention Harvard? I know they.
Not yet. They.
I know they play Dartmouth at some point this weekend. I think that's their only game.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
And I only bring that up as, you know, obviously they've got this freshman class that's you know, quite heralded.
It's time to see some results here.
Yep.
That's a league game Friday night. They play at Dartmouth Friday. That's a league game. They played an exhibition against McGill and needed two goals in the third period to tie that. So, that was that. Louis LeBlanc had an assist on Harvard's first goal in that exhibition game.
I mean, there's a lot going on with that team, more than just the freshmen. You know, obviously we talk about the freshmen because, you know, it's as good a class as they've had in some time. But, you know, you've got the goalie Richter coming back into the fold. You know, you've got some veteran talent in there, too, that can, you know, if these kids are as good as advertised, and Richter, who was pretty darn good, you know, a couple years ago.
Yeah. He's the goalie of the year in the league.
Yeah.
Ahead of Scrivens, Kalemba, Alec Richards.
So, you know, they might have a little something going there.
Well, they've got to have something going there, or else it's just not a good situation. I mean, they've got to do things this year and set some high goals and attain them, I think.
You know. So, what would be? Are you saying that there's a?
I'm saying top four regular season.
Saying, do they need to make the NCAA tournament?
No. I'm saying top four regular season, or if they're fifth or sixth, they make it to Albany by winning that second weekend of the conference playoffs. I think, I mean, they open against BC in the Bean Pot. I think that's a winnable game for them. You know, I think you gotta look at play for that title. I think you need to show well at Minnesota. They've got two at Minnesota in early January. Their first five games are on the road, so it's not an easy start. But and those are the kinds of things that I would be looking for as a Crimson fan if I was a Harvard fan. So
do you get? Is this just your gut instinct, or you get it, or do you? Are there some legitimate? Do you think there's some legitimate concerns regarding Harvard and, you know, kind of the direction they're going based on this season?
I think there are legitimate concerns. I don't have a strong indication that they're looking to make changes, but.
But it's on the radar there, probably.
I think there could be some restlessness among influential alumni. I wouldn't be happy if you ran off 3 or 4 years like they're in now, or 2 to 3, I should say. But we'll see. And you know, it's kind of like Minnesota, where we talked about it toward the top of the podcast with, you know, it's not so much I have a problem with that this team is losing, but how they're losing, you know, and that's what makes you wonder. And I mean, this is a Harvard team that didn't win a single game away from home last year, was 0-8-0 in non-league games or something like that. It just, you know, it's like, they were so out of it that there wasn't anything to say, oh, geez, well, that was a good, you know, that was good or that was good. Other than, you know, they beat Cornell at home and finished fifth. You know, all their wins and ties were home league games. And they ended up in fifth place. And then they got shut out twice by Brown in the first round of the playoffs. So, you know. I think you got to put something together there. But.
So we can say that Ted DiNanno's not on the hot seat, but he's on the.
He's being watched.
He's on a. His seat could get hot.
I think that's fair.
All right. I was just trying to flush that out.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Prosecution rests.
All right. Well, there we go.
And what else we got going on this weekend? I know you want to dive back into Huntsville a little bit.
Well, that was another Twitter question we got.
That's right.
From, Jeff Morris, owner and operator and proprietor of the Save UAH Hockey website. If you want to visit that and check in on the Chargers, saveuahhockey.com. So that's where you can find the latest about Huntsville. And his question had to do with what does it mean for Huntsville that they've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 23 to 25 games already scheduled for next year? And my answer to that is not a whole lot. At this point, I think the decision, you know, unless things change as far as conference affiliation, the decision on what UAH hockey does next year rests with UAH hockey. You know, Huntsville's got to decide if they want to play as a Division I independent, if they want to cease operation of the program, if they want to go to the club level, if they want to maybe explore going to Division II or Division III level. And then the contracted agreements of those games could be reviewed, and those are kind of independent deals. So if they've got a series scheduled with Notre Dame or, you know, Bemidji State or Niagara or whomever it might be, you know, they'll talk about those. It would be a lot easier. I shouldn't say that. I should say I think teams would be able to find games if they all of a sudden have two openings on their schedule because Huntsville isn't playing next year. But I also think that they would honor games against an independent Huntsville team if they were a Division I opponent.
I would agree with that.
So that's where I would go with that.
And obviously we haven't, you know, there's really nothing new to report regarding Huntsville. You know, other than the stuff that happens on the ice, you know, they were swept by Western Michigan last weekend. Back-to-back 2-1 scores. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. It's really hard to predict what's going to happen with them, I think. I got to believe they're going to end up in the CCHA. And I don't think it's going to be I don't think it's something that's going to happen, you know, it's not going to be a thing that's, you know, because it's the right thing to do for college hockey, or some kind of, you know, altruistic motive like that. I think they're going to do it because, you know, I know there's costs associated with, you know, admitting it, Alabama Huntsville into the league, and a lot of them, you know, And I think that's a concern for some of the smaller schools in the CCHA. That said, I think that has a chance to be a pretty darn good market for the CCHA.
Yeah, I think that if it comes about, it will be a result of it because it's the right thing. It's not going to be a sympathy move.
Exactly.
It's going to be because Alabama Huntsville provides a value to the league, and that's what they should. That's the approach I would use.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think it's gonna. I think it might take a little bit of time for some of the CCHA members who are maybe most opposed to at this point in time to letting Huntsville in. But I think that over the course of you know, maybe this season and next, if it has to go that far, you know, I don't know. I think it's a good market. Yeah. I think it's you know, it's a solid program. Obviously they've got a pretty fair hockey team this year based on some of the wins that they've had. And I just got a feeling if they get into a league like the CCHA where, you know, you have the Northern Michigans, you know, the fans in Huntsville have proven that they're going to show up for these games regardless of who's on the other team, you know?
Right.
You know, it's not like what, and I, maybe I shouldn't beat on them again, but to say it's not like a Western Michigan where people show up for Michigan and Michigan State. And, you know, when Bowling Green rolls in, there's about 1500 people in the building.
Right.
You know, I think Huntsville could be the kind of place where when a Bowling Green or a Northern Michigan rolls in, there's maybe 4,000 in the building. And then when the Michigans and the Michigan States and Ohio States roll in, then it's, you know, then it's more than that. Then it's, you know, close, you're looking close to a sellout.
Yeah. You know, I think you're looking similar to Omaha.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of a smaller Omaha.
Yep. Yeah, I could go with that. I could go with that. Well, Bus, this is our second podcast of the year, and last week we were short on deterioration.
Yes, we were.
So let's go ahead and open the floor. I know you wanted to comment on Thundersticks.
It sounds horrible.
Not only Thundersticks, but
it sounds like Thundersticks sounds like a snack, doesn't it?
No.
Oh.
Not to me.
I think I would like to eat some Thundersticks. You know, they're salty.
Are they in the Funyuns category?
Yeah, I think I would put them in the Funyuns. Yeah, more like, yeah, maybe more like Bugles.
Oh, gotcha.
Anyways,
but in that section of your grocer's aisle.
Yeah. Anyways, getting back to Thundersticks, and there is a snack reference here. I've always thought of, you know, I'm not a fan of the Thundersticks. First of all, because I think clapping is louder. And second of all, there's nothing more ridiculous sounding than a bunch of people banging Thundersticks together. It just sounds stupid. It's not intimidating at all. It sounds like maybe, you know, it sounds like you're in like one of those bubble machines or something. Anyways, but that said, you know, I can understand if you go to an event and there's a, you know, there's, ooh, thunder, a couple Thundersticks sitting on my seat. You know, it basically, I compared it to the, you know, it's the cheering version of like Gardetto's snack mix. You know, nobody really goes out and buys Gardetto stack snack mix, but if you're at the bar and it's sitting in front of you, you know, you'll have a pretzel or a peanut or even, you know, a little chip of rye bread or whatever is in there, you know. But it's not something you're seeking out when you're going to Sam's Club or, you know, the grocery store or wherever. Same with Thundersticks. So when I go to the football game last weekend, when Notre Dame played Boston College, and not only did somebody have Thundersticks with them, brought them into the game, it was a Boston College fan. So,
you missed the main point there. It didn't matter that it was a Boston College fan. What the key phrase is, brought them into the game.
Brought them with them.
Imported Thundersticks.
These were not just sitting on the seat when this person arrived. This person said, you know, this is a big game. This is a rivalry game. Boston College, the team that I root for, has won 6 in a row against Notre Dame. And we would certainly like to keep that streak going. What can I do to enhance my team's chances? Maybe what can I bring that would further my team, that would compel my team to continue to win this? And of all the options, this person said, you know what, I'm going to bring my Thundersticks. First of all, you should not take Thundersticks out of the arena if they're freebies.
Correct.
Obviously, they are freebies. Because, first of all, you should never buy Thundersticks.
No.
And unless you're, let's say, it's okay to bring them home if you're under the age of, let's say,
12.
Yeah, I was going to say 12. 13 and above, you cannot take Thundersticks out of the venue. If you are 13 and older and you do try to take them, there should be an usher at the door with a needle that just pops them as you try to leave. But the thing that baffled me is, you know, of all the various noisemakers and assorted fan-related paraphernalia
that to cheer for your team.
One, yes.
Body paint, wig, devices,
signs. All the related accessories. What prompted this person to think that Thundersticks was a good choice?
Don't know.
I don't know either. I should have accosted this person, or at least questioned them, as to why. Why Thundersticks?
Yeah.
And if the answer would have been, well, I brought them to 6 games previous, and they've won all 6, I'm going to say, you know what? Wrong answer, because they should have gone to 1 game, the game you got them, and then you should have left them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thunderstick has a short half-life.
Yes.
So, let that be a lesson to everyone. No Thundersticks. I was very irate about this on Saturday.
Now, does this bring the Battle Royale inside the octagon between the Boston College Thundersticks and the Boston University Glowsticks? That's... You can comment on that if you'd like.
Well, here's the thing about Glowsticks. I mean...
I can't wait to hear this.
I don't know.
Just let it go. Abort.
No, I think I have to tackle this.
All right, go ahead.
All right.
All right, fat man, let's do this.
Okay. Refresh my memory though. What are the BC just wears the glow sticks, or do they wave them, or BU just wears them around their neck, or do they wave them, or
I don't know.
Probably. See, to me, here's the here's the thing about glow sticks. Again, there's an age limitation on them. I'm going to say 7. Maybe 8. And if you're above 8, you're only allowed to have glow sticks if your plan is to break them open and try to light the liquid on fire. See if it's flammable.
Yeah.
Because people don't know that what's inside glow sticks is really napalm. That's anyway. Cool. The Thunderstick, at least the Thunderstick makes... It makes a statement that you're cheering for your team. It's a poor statement, but it's a statement. And it says...
I am cheering for my team very poorly.
Yeah. This is a feeble attempt. This is my feeble attempt of supporting my team.
Right.
Glowstick says to me, I don't know. See, the glowstick says
seeking,
to me,
I'm seeking attention.
Not just, well, it says to me, I've been, it seems, I think it says to me, I've been dropping X in a Belgian disco.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's way too shaky for me. Way too shaky. The next step, you're going to have like the big foam machine in there or something.
Oh yeah.
From the disco. It's just a little too sprockets for my liking.
Gotcha.
And it doesn't say anything. It doesn't. It does have that look at me aspect to it.
I agree with that.
But it's not look at me for attention. It's look at me because, probably because I'm a giant tool.
Probably.
Well, yeah. And by probably, I mean absolutely. Sorry.
All right.
Sorry if I...
Sorry to all the giant tools who are offended by that.
Sorry.
I'm an asshat.
Well, yeah.
Okay. How about...
How do we go from glow sticks to skating bears?
Well, that's where the power of the Inch Segway, Inch Podcast Segway comes into play. You saw some news today out of
Kyrgyzstan,
Eastern Europe,
someplace over there. Yeah. Kyrgyzstan. There was a story. It was a legit story too. It was on the. I think we got it off the BBC.
The Beeb.
I wonder if they broke into programming to announce that, to read that. I doubt it.
Probably not.
Apparently, there was a circus in Kyrgyzstan that had in its employ a skating bear, and apparently one day during, I don't know,
rehearsal?
Morning skate. He snapped and he
went, fatally injured his handler.
Went Bertuzzi on his handler.
Let's not do that.
What?
Let's not do that.
Well, I'm just saying.
Let's.
He fatally injured his.
Fatally injured his, yes.
His handler.
Yes.
And apparently they came in and obviously...
And another one of the... Yeah, this isn't the only skating bear in the Russian circus. So it's actually a pretty common act, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is as common as the, trapeze artists at your local circus. Or
the bicycle riding bears.
Yes, or the lion tamer. But... He's not the only skating bear in town, but, and he's not any bear anymore.
So
they killed the bear after he.
Yeah.
Another one of the circus employees came in to try to rescue the initial injured employee, and he's still in critical condition, according to the report.
Instigator.
Third man.
He got us. You know, maybe Gary Bettman knows something we don't. Third man in, you're going to get mauled. But here's the questions I have about that. First, who puts the skates on the bear?
Probably the handler.
Well, I would think that might be enough to set the bear off.
Yeah.
I don't think there's bears running through the woods and, you know, they happen upon a nice, pristine, frozen pond and saying, you know what I could use today? A nice skate.
Go for a good skate.
Look at that ice. I mean, that's... And the other thing that I'm thinking is, you know, maybe the trainer made him was dismayed by his last performance and had put him through a bag skate or something.
Could have been.
And then just set him off.
Could have been.
And at the end of that report, it did say that the bears, sometimes in the circus, the bears do play hockey.
Yeah, you can find that on YouTube.
Oh, you can?
Oh, yeah. You can find anything on YouTube.
I have not seen the hockey-playing bears.
Yeah. They're on there.
I just didn't know what, you know, when I see a story that says... skating Russian bear mauls trainer. That'll catch an eye.
Yeah, that's there. Fine. What?
I don't. The first time, actually, I heard a little bit about Kevin Smith, the director, was talking about this on the radio the other day, and he was wondering how the bear, you know, what possesses the bear to get involved in this line of work.
Yeah. Pulling salmon out of a cold stream isn't good enough for you?
Yeah, I guess not. He said, what, you know, is it the lure of, you know, three hots in a cot that tempt the bear? like, you know, I've been living in, you know, the bear starts thinking I've been living in this woods, you know, I can join the circus, see the world, skate a little, get some cardio.
Maybe draw the interest of a minor league team in California.
That'd be a pretty good enforcer.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Anything else? That's my deterioration.
Thoughts?
You had some NFL thoughts.
I always have NFL thoughts. And those thoughts are, I don't care. There's a lot of bad teams in that league right now.
That's, you know, that was, were we talking about this last week?
Yeah, we talked about it.
There are some good teams, and there is a lot. You remember when everybody was 8-8?
That's how it is seemingly every year. You know,
well, except for this year.
Two will have 12, and two will have 4, and then everyone else will be between 7-9 and 9-7.
Except for this year.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, how can you be that bad at the NFL? Like, Buffalo's terrible, and they've won 2 in a row. And they're awful.
I think Cleveland might be the worst, and Cleveland's got at least one win, I think.
Yeah, they beat Buffalo.
Yeah, they beat Buffalo 6-3.
3-0.
Was it 3-0?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Anyways.
I think their quarterback was something like 1-24 and won the game. I'm not.
Yeah. I need to start following that team just for.
They traded their only real offensive weapon. He might have gotten just tossed out of town by LeBron.
Yeah, LeBron. I think LeBron told him to go. Yeah. So we have Buffalo.
There's not room in this town for both of us.
There's certainly not room for LeBron and Shaq and Braylon.
Correcto.
So Buffalo, 2 wins, terrible. Cleveland, I think they beat somebody. They're terrible. Tampa Bay, they're terrible.
Washington's lousy.
Washington's terrible, and they've won 2 games.
Until the Monday night game that they had against the Eagles, all of their games
that's right.
were against teams that hadn't won yet. That's unbelievable. That Bills and Browns game was 6-3. Back on October 11th.
I'm trying to make my list of terrible teams here. Oakland. Surprisingly long.
Oakland's terrible.
Oakland might be the worst of them. I still think Cleveland's the worst of them all. I mean, they have absolutely nothing. Is this an exhaustive list?
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Let me see here. No, I think I have a list of... I have a list of 8. No, I don't. I have a list of 10 teams. You give me your yay. That's, what is that? That's 1/3 of NFL, of the NFL?
Yeah.
A little more. A little less than 1/3. Quarter. Tell me if these teams are awful. Buffalo.
Yep.
Cleveland.
Yes.
Tampa Bay.
Probably.
Washington.
Definitely.
Oakland.
Definitely.
Kansas City.
I think so.
St. Louis.
So the ones I'm waffling on, I just haven't paid enough attention. I get Bills, Redskins, and Cleveland news geographically, so.
St. Louis.
Yeah, they stink, right?
Mm-hmm. Carolina.
I saw them play a little bit on the first week. And their quarterback had like 9 turnovers.
Yeah.
And he's still their starting quarterback.
Yeah, he is.
So I'm going to put them in the terrible then.
Detroit.
Oh, yeah. Terrible.
And then Tennessee.
My Titans. Oh, man. They are not good.
I don't know what happened there. But see, I don't get...
I'll tell you what happened there. And this... Now, you see, you finally got me where I need to be to rant on the NFL. This team didn't have drastic change from last year when they had, like, 13 wins.
Mm-hmm.
And now they can't beat anybody. That just goes to show you, and people who like the NFL say, oh, that's the great part about the league. You never know. Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know? I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
It'd be like the Yankees and Phillies winning 68 games apiece next year. Not happening.
No.
You know? So. Whatever.
I don't think any sport is good when one-third of the teams are awful.
Well, that's not what the NFL wants.
No.
They want all the teams to be equally awful. They want all 32 teams to be awful. So.
I hate to say this.
You can say that they're a third of the way to achieving their goals.
I hate to say this because I mean, I'm an NFL fan, but I've been less interested this year than any other year.
And your team's good.
And my team's good. My team's the Vikings, for crying out loud. And I could be less. I could not be any less interested in that team.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Favre thing helped hasten my disinterest, but that's another story for another time.
Speaking of attention seekers.
He probably brought his own thundersticks. He probably was going to wear a
glove. He brought his own thundersticks to his series of 6 press conferences refuting his previous press conference.
I heard he mowed his lawn wearing a glow stick.
Possibly. Possibly. I did mention the Yankees and Phillies game one in the books at the World Series of Baseball. And the Phillies won. 6-1. Cliff Lee was dealing.
Yes, he was.
Thoughts and prayers to the Cleveland Indians fans out there.
Yeah.
How much is that? That's
an inter-squad scrim. It's an inter-squad game.
Let's watch our 2 best players the last 10 years pitch game one against each other in the World Series. Yikes.
Was CC rocking the parachute pants tonight?
As always.
Those things are big.
He's big.
Yeah. I was listening to a local radio sports guy today.
Does his name start with Tim?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately.
It's unfortunate.
I heard some of that, too. But anyways, breaking down high school football. Anyways.
Oh, yeah, they had selection show on Sunday.
Yeah.
My Vikes get in or no?
No. No. Hazlitt Vikings are out. Guy said New York Yankees 40th American League pennant.
Yes.
And then he said, you know, he said, that is amazing. To which I replied, what's amazing about it? What's amazing that the Yankees won the AL this year?
Yeah. Or that they won it when they had Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and right. 5 other teams to beat. Yeah.
It's amazing that they lost. What's more amazing is that how many times they've lost it in the last how many years when they've spent $200 million or $300 million or however much they've spent.
I saw one number that said $1.2 billion in salary expenditures since 2001. That's unbelievable. It was a local columnist in Central New York. And, you know, he was talking about how they haven't been there, they haven't made the World Series, they've tried their best, and sometimes you end up with Carl Pavano, and sometimes you end up with Alex Rodriguez, you know, you don't know. But he closed his column by saying, just goes to show you get what you pay for eventually. So.
That's funny.
That was good. I'm not a big fan of the Phillies.
No, I'm not either. They seem kind of... And I know that You know,
For me, it's tough. It's the Phillies I probably wouldn't have a problem with, but just their idiot fans make me crazy. I can't cheer for a team that those kinds of people cheer for.
Yeah.
So.
The one problem I have with the Phillies, I think, mainly is their ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah.
They say, which in turn makes me think of them as a little bit slow-pitch softball-y.
Yeah, I'd buy that. Buy that.
But I don't, you know, I don't like the Yankees either. So
the numbers don't really back it up before you Philly fans, because I know you're going to write, because everyone hates you and you're awesome. Maybe you guys could go beat each other up in the parking lot again. In the meantime.
Oh, that happened at North Dakota.
Oh, there was a death in a fight outside of Phillies stadium, in a fight between Phillies fans earlier this summer.
That's great.
Yeah, great. That's the word I'd use for it. Yeah.
No, I was
a bunch of fights in the crowd tonight at the Rangers and Islanders game.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Why? You know what? That's another thing. Why do people fight at games? Like, it's become, I'm going to say bus, it's become almost downright accepted. Like, you go to an NFL game, you know you're going to see 30 people get kicked out for fighting. No matter what market, what stadium, you know, it doesn't matter if you're playing a rival or you're playing a preseason game against a team from the other coast. It's unbelievable.
I agree. Alcohol is a big factor.
Yeah, but I think...
I
think it's the same kind of people who get in fights when they go to the bar. They go there expecting to be in a fight. And it doesn't matter if they have 2 shots of whiskey or 25 shots of whiskey. They're looking to get in a scrap because that's what they went there to do. And it's just, I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I would like to get some. Here's the thing. I don't think I attend enough sporting events as just a regular old fan.
Right.
To maybe have insight on this. I don't know. I would be interested to hear from somebody. About this phenomenon. You know, it's one of the reasons why we like to poke fun at North Dakota fans is because they get so defensive and then they send us nasty emails and we just read them and laugh.
Yeah, but it's not about fighting. It's
sticking
up for their team.
Right.
Or themselves or something.
Sticking.
Or making fun of other conferences. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't understand this fighting phenomenon. That's a very good point.
I don't get it. I mean, like what? You know, you've got a daughter who's 4 now? 3?
4.
4
almost
years
5.
Old. You want to take her to a Lions game?
Well.
And ask her, you know, what kind of questions are you going to have to answer on your way home from the stadium? Like, where does that come into play? I don't know. I don't get
it. Yeah.
That.
Exactly.
I don't get it.
Well, and this gets, and I don't mean to circle back to hockey talk again. God forbid. That we talk about hockey, but you know, there was an edit, and this is not, and I'm just bringing up North Dakota as an example because there was an editorial in the Grand Forks paper, I think it was last week, you know, after this, there was an incident, obviously, you know, that most people heard about, a Minnesota fan and a Sioux fan got into it. I think it was a Minnesota fan that punched the Sioux fan, fell backwards, hit his head. In the hospital. And the editorial was, you know, more or less, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, be nicer at the rink. Basically, I mean, don't be a jerk. And I was surprised and it wasn't a particularly great editorial. There were some suggestions in there that were kind of odd and maybe, you know, didn't really address the matter at hand. But, you know, the theme was, you know, just be respectful. You know, it's okay for good-natured ribbings and to joke about stuff, you know. But let's, you know, there's no reason to get hostile. There's no reason to be, you know, act like a fool.
Exactly.
And the interesting thing to me was the number of responses to this editorial written by, you know, written by fans on the website, you know, again, anonymously or behind a username that nobody can decipher, where it says, you know, things like, if you don't like it, if you don't like the behavior, don't bring your kids to the game. If you don't, you know, this is our home ice advantage, blah, blah, blah. We want to make it tough for other teams to play here. That's just the way hockey is, or that's, you know, that's the way the sport is, so on and so forth. It really shocked me. And I'm not saying that this is something that's unique to North Dakota, because I'm sure if it was in, you know,
other cities
that, you know, the responses wouldn't be any different. But just that mind, the thing that really appalled me was were the people that write, if you don't like it, you know, if you don't want your kids to hear this language, then don't bring them. Well, yeah, that's
not it. Yeah, you're in a public venue.
Yeah, there's no defense for that argument at all.
Yeah.
It's not even valid.
Don't bring your kids to hockey games.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, if we can't bring the kids, I mean, who can we bring?
Yeah. If you want to have a frat party, go to a frat party. We'll go to the right. Hockey. Yeah.
So, just act nicer, people. That's all we're saying.
Yeah.
Give peace a chance.
Yeah, it's cool. Have fun with it. I got nothing else. I get to tee off in the NFL. That's always a good time for me.
Yeah, I got nothing else either. You'd probably swear less with thundersticks, though.
That is true. They turn into weapons.
So, I suppose.
We'll see. We will see. NHL Network... apparently has Michigan State and Western Friday night.
I have verified that as true. NHL Network, Western Michigan at Michigan State. I believe that's a 7 p.m. face-off.
Yeah, that's for
Eastern.
NHL Network users in the States.
In the States.
Domestic. Stateside.
And also, and this is a brainstorm that I had today, for you readers of the Friday Forecast on Inch.
Yes, I am one of those.
We will start dumping in the TV schedule for the week.
Good idea.
Just so you have a once I just hit me in the head today like a sack full of doorknobs that we should put that in there. So. If you don't feel like perusing the entire TV schedule, just wait for the Friday Forecast to come out. It'll be out by noon on Fridays at the latest. And go to the bottom, and we'll have the TV schedule for the weekend. And
good idea.
And rainbows and pink lemonade for everyone.
Orange wedges?
See, the person with the thundersticks could have brought orange wedges for the team and would have been better. That would have been better.
It would have helped the team win more.
It would. You know, keep them from getting scurvy.
True.
Also, you know what? I think for one of these podcasts, and this is, I think I might be belaboring this now, but we need to have an interview with a former Boston College Eagle. That we know.
Oh, yeah.
Because this the eagle at the game on last week was pretty lethargic.
Ah. Did not help the team win.
No. no, it was not mascot professionalism.
Right on. All right, well, that'll do it for the Inside College Hockey podcast. We welcome your feedback. Our email address is inch@insidecollegehockey.com. That'll get to both Mike and I. And we'll be back with another podcast in the near future. Till then, keep checking out insidecollegehockey.com.